talking at?
Welcome to Next Gen, the 15-minute rewatch podcast of Star Trek The Next Generation that gives you more time to watch more Trek. I'm Bill Smith.
And I'm Jamie Rogers. This episode, we examine the season one episode Where No One Has Gone Before, where we get our introduction to good old Lobster Claws, the Traveler.
Well, before we look at Where No One Has Gone Before, let's take a look at the library computer data. Where No One Has Gone Before, written by Diane Duane and Michael Reeves. Now, Diane Duane is a longtime Star Trek novelist, so no shock that she finally got a chance to contribute to a Star Trek series. The episode was directed by Rob Bowman, and it aired originally on October 24th, 1987. The Enterprise has catapulted more than a billion light years from its galaxy when a test on the ship's propulsion systems backfires. Wow. That's not putting too fine a point on it, huh? But Jamie, you're going to tell us all about this particular episode in your world-famous and much-heralded two-minute recap, which starts now.
The Enterprise meets with the USS Fearless in order to take on a propulsion specialist who will make upgrades to the ship's warp drive. Riker, who is not convinced about the success of the experiment, meets Kaczynski in the transporter room along with Troy and Chief Engineer Argyle. Kaczynski, who is very arrogant, demands to be taken to engineering. Troy comments that she is unable to sense anything from Kaczynski's mysterious assistant. In engineering, Riker and Argyle question Kaczynski while Wesley watches Kaczynski's assistant at the engineering station and offers him some suggestions on how to improve the formulas. Picard instructs LaForge to proceed at warp 1.5 to begin the experiment. The ship has a massive burst of speed as LaForge tells the captain that they have passed warp 10. The assistant grabs his console and starts to phase in and out of view. However, it is only Wesley who happens to notice. After Picard orders the engines to reverse, LaForge reports that they have traveled 2,700,000 light years from their previous position, and it will take them over 300 years at maximum warp to get home. Kaczynski comes to the bridge pleased with the results of the experiment. Wesley, who is down in engineering and talking to the assistant, realizes he is the one who is behind all the upgrades, not Kaczynski. Picard orders Kaczynski to bring them home. While in engineering, Wesley tries to tell Riker about what he is known. However, Riker does not listen to him. They begin their warp experiment again, and this time the experiment fails as the assistant phases again and then collapses on the console. Being even farther away from their original destination, the crew begins to start to see things that cannot be there. Worf sees a Targ, Yara sees a cat from her home colony, and Picard even sees his mother drinking tea. As the assistant is brought to sickbay, Picard tells Crusher to wake him. He identifies himself as a traveler from another plane of existence. He tells Picard that he will try and get the ship back home. He also privately tells Picard that people like Wesley are why he travels. He compares him to Mozart and asks Picard to encourage Wesley and his ability. Picard returns to the bridge and tells the crew to support the traveler with their thoughts as they begin the experiment again. The traveler begins to phase as the Enterprise hurtles back through space. He disappears completely as the Enterprise arrives back where it started. Mindful of the traveler's advice, Picard invites Wesley to the bridge and announces that he is now an acting ensign.
Great job there, Jamie. I mean, I really think you summed up everything that happened in just over 2 minutes. Probably better than I could do, so great job.
Thank you, sir.
Let's step into the observation lounge and talk a little bit about what worked for us and what didn't, and I'll be happy to go first. As far as what worked, I have to say that establishing the potential for Wesley early on really worked for me in the scope of this episode, despite the fact that we've already had a few episodes of Wesley Trek so far, where he saves the day repeatedly. I gave him a more realistic path for his character, I thought.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree with you. In fact, it was one of the things that I mentioned that worked as well, the growth of his character. And I like this character being introduced of the Traveler to kind of propel Wesley's arc further. I think it was an excellent step by the producers of the show.
You know, the other thing that works for me really well, I have to say, is the visual effects in this episode. And this is 1987. We're seeing a lot of stuff on television that really before was reserved for films. And you can tell that, you know, a house like Industrial Light and Magic is working on this particular series because they are, you know, at the time, probably the top visual effects house, you know, in the world. So it says a lot about the money being put into Next Gen, but it gives it a look like something we've never seen before, which I think is important for this episode.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I mean, I think that if I would have seen this, which I think I'm going to mention in a little bit, but if I would have seen this as the first episode of TNG as the pilot, it would have really made sense to me and really been visually stunning. I still, even to this day, appreciate the practical effects that we see on TNG. And to me, those effects still hold up even to this day.
Oh, absolutely. So that's what worked for me. What else was in your What Works column there, Jamie?
Well, I know we talked about the growth of Wesley, but I also like the growth between Picard and Riker's relationship. We see that they're starting to get away from that formality of the command and the first officer, and we see there's a comfort level there. Especially, I'm kind of referencing the beginning sequence where they're basically having a discussion, and it's not formal like it was in the first few episodes. There's an informality there, and they're more on a personal level, and I'm really starting to appreciate that, and I like the growth of their friendship, you know. And really, the last thing that really worked for me is, and I know you're not a big fan of the Traveler, but I thought I liked his arc, and I liked the establishment of his arc in the beginning, as we see him make other appearances later on in the show. I think he was an excellent character.
Very interesting. And that's going to, you know, kind of springboard me into the what doesn't work, because my first on the list of what doesn't work for me is the character of the Traveler. I think it's a little too much mystery, honestly. How can he do these things? And there's a lot left to the imagination. And I get that we've never seen somebody from his race before, but you think there would be something a little more concrete around it. Plus, I mean, I don't find the Traveler all that compelling as a character. I largely think he's pretty dull when he's on screen, so I don't feel compelled to root for him, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it absolutely makes sense. And I mean, there are definitely some holes in the development of the character of the Traveler in general. I mean, how is Starfleet allowing this guy to basically go gallivant from ship to ship with Kaczynski to, you know, work on warp drive propulsion and the warp drive systems when really nobody knows anything about his origins or where he comes from or maybe some of the concerns. And it kind of leads to the thought too, as well as what exactly happened when they were on these previous two ships?
Yeah.
You know, if the experiment went this horribly wrong, what happened? What happened previously? And the fact that it takes Wesley to kind of point things out to him, even on the Enterprise, just, I agree, is definitely some holes in the character as well.
Well, there's some vast holes in the Kaczynski character as well. You know, the Traveler comes aboard as his assistant. Kaczynski is credited as the guy with the new method and the technology to improve the Enterprise's warp engines. But really, he has no idea what's going on. Starfleet is an organization based on science. You would think they would have said, show us the data, what you did and why, before we start implementing this across our fleet of starships. And I just don't get the sense that that happened here, you know?
No, absolutely. And to me, he doesn't work either. Just his whole manner, I think, really goes against the early concept in TNG of no personal conflict. I just think that it was kind of a misstep to make him as arrogant as he was. I mean, he clearly knows he's not the one, even though he seems to think in his own mind that he's the one who's causing all these great warp field experiments, he's really not the one that's doing that by any stretch. And I just think that how they portrayed his character doesn't work at all.
No, it really doesn't. It sets they're not really adversaries. I mean, they're not bad people. They add to the drama that is in this episode and the situation the Enterprise is put in. But then it's all kind of resolved a little janky. And I think you have at least one point relating to that.
You know, Bill, the other thing that really kind of didn't work for me was this whole people's thoughts affecting the outcome of the story. And I kind of liken it to the to my the Peter Pan type element where, you know, Peter Pan, if you believed you could fly, you could fly. Well, I just, that didn't work for me in this plot. I thought it was enough to carry the plot that they were where no man has gone before. And I think it would have made more sense if maybe they encountered some sort of entity that they had never encountered before, as opposed to saying, well, we're in an area where our thoughts are going to create different sorts of things. And I get it. They were trying to do this whole thought of, you know, thoughts affecting how the traveler does things. But I just, I didn't like it as part of the story.
You know, for me, it's a little too Peter Pan because essentially the traveler is Tinkerbell and we're the audience having to think good thoughts in order, you know, to let Tinkerbell come in and save the day. And I really think you sum it up really greatly there because that's really what this script comes down to. You know, free your mind from everything else, but think about the traveler because that's what's going to get us through this. It just doesn't quite work.
Yeah. And it's like anything else. When you tell somebody not to think about something, they're going to think about it. You know, it's human nature. And
when someone asks you if you're a god, Ray, you say yes.
Yes. You know, Bill, the other thing that really didn't work for me either was how everybody treats Wesley. I mean, and it goes from Kaczynski to Picard to Riker. I mean, it's ridiculous. Like they can't even use his name half the time. They're calling him boy. Why is this boy over here? Why is this boy in sick bay? I mean, it's ridiculous. I get it that they're trying to, you know, say something. They're trying to almost protect us from the fact that Wesley's going to save the ship every week. They're trying to kind of downplay that a little bit, but it's embarrassing how they portray adults in the 24th century this early on.
I don't disagree with you one bit. You know, it kind of reminds me of how Star Wars continually refers to characters as young Skywalker. He's got a name. Why do we have to pick on the fact that he's young? Because ultimately he's going to be the savior of everything that's going on here. So let's take a look at this episode's inner light, Jamie. And we're going to ask what we learn about the characters, the Trek universe, or possibly even ourselves in this episode. And I'll let you go first.
Well, Picard and Riker's relationship, and I know I touched on it earlier, really has matured to the point where they can freely speak their mind with one another. And it isn't so much of a formality like we saw early on with Encounter at Farpoint.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that, and it's interesting to have it happen kind of six episodes in, where they are becoming this comfortable. It tells me that Picard is putting the right people around him and that there's a level of trust that's forming.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, something else that kind of really kind of I noticed when I was watching this episode as I watched this one especially closely is I really truly feel bad for Tasha Yar as a character.
Yeah.
You know, I mean... I like the fact that they built up her background story where we got to kind of see a visual of what she went through. And I think it's better than what we saw in Encounter at Farpoint where she was basically yelling at Q about how bad her life was. So it's better than that, but they are really just not giving her much to work with at all. And it's so frustrating. And I never understood Denise Crosby, but the more I watch these intently, I can understand her frustration. I mean, there's points in this episode where she is literally just standing there with no dialogue at all.
Yeah. It's really kind of sad. I mean, Tasha Yar was a character with such potential and promise and really had the opportunity to sort of set herself apart as a female character in Star Trek. And unfortunately, I mean, I can't begrudge Denise the desire to want to leave and do something else because there was just nothing there. And spoiler alert, because that doesn't happen until later in the season. But it's obvious that the writers are struggling with figuring out the Yar character.
No, absolutely. You know, this episode really kind of reminds me a lot, too, of The Man Trap. And I know maybe not for how the plot is, but I like how The Man Trap, even though it was created after the pilot, it was kind of stuck in as the pilot, and we kind of just pick up right where the crew is. And I almost feel like this episode could have been a pilot, so to speak, that we could have gotten dropped right in there. And it kind of, to me, it kind of would have worked pretty well as a pilot. The sci-fi concept could have worked. I mean, obviously, as you know, I'm not a big fan of the Peter Pan element. But I liked the character development with Wesley as a pilot episode.
No, I have to agree with that. It would have been very interesting to see this as the very first episode, and perhaps with a little tweaking, because I think that there's no way you really get 2 hours out of this story unless you introduce Q in the middle, kind of like the way Gene did with Dorothy Fontana's script for Encounter at Farpoint that we talked about before. I think it would have been much more interesting. I think you would see a crew that kind of feels like it belongs together, unlike in Farpoint where it's just people who don't know each other. So yeah, I have to agree with that. I'm going to go on and say that as far as the inner light of this episode, you know, the things that humans have seen and done really are just a drop in the bucket. And there is so much more to discover in Star Trek and kind of in the here and now. I think we have to remember that we don't have all the answers. And I think that's partly because we don't even know all the questions at this point. We're kind of still figuring out what we are as a race of humans, beings. And it'll be interesting to see where we go in the future. But man, Jamie, do we have so much further to go?
No, absolutely. And the show really only gets better as time goes on.
It really does. And that's going to do it for this particular episode of Next Gen. Jamie, why don't you tell us about our next episode we're watching of Star Trek The Next Generation?
Well, Bill, it's a lonely one. We get to see Crusher's awesome medical cap and a possessed Captain Picard. It's the season one episode, It's Lonely Among Us.
Ah, so good. I can't wait to talk about that one. In the meantime, thanks for joining us for this episode of Next Gen. To leave us feedback, click on the More button here in the app and send us an email.
And as always, live long and prosper.